You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Bushels of fun. Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bell time and jingle bell time. Dancing and prancing in Jingle Bell Square. In the frosty air, what a bright time. It's the right time to rock the night away. Jingle bell time is a swell time to go gliding in the one horse sleigh. Giddy up, jingle horse, pick up your feet. Jingle around the clock. Mix and a mingle in the jingling feet. That's the jingle bell rock.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. 9:07 here on 8. Thursday. If you know anybody that's struggling with their gravy, they make turkey. The All Marine Radio website has a little piece that the chef and I did. Get your PhD in gravy. Go ahead and check that out. Go ahead and check that out. The Tom Droughty is spoke at his high school, so he is one of our friends and certainly become a fan of having General Droughty on. Just a good dude, and been that way his whole life. So he spoke at his high school. And so you're going to hear his address right now. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. Tom Droughty, giving a speech to Bishop McNamara Catholic High School. Gave it on November 17, 2017. So in his own words, Tom Droughty.
Brigadier General Droughty is a native of Kankakee and a 1958 graduate of St. Patrick's Central. He was a member and captain of the very first undefeated football team here at Bishop McNamara or St. Patrick Central. Brigadier General Droughty attended Bishop McNamara and graduated, as I said, in 1958 as a valedictorian. After graduating from St. Patrick Central, he attended the United States Naval Academy. He graduated with distinction from the Naval Academy in 1962. After graduating from the academy, Brigadier General Droughty had a distinguished career in the United States Marine Corps. He served three tours in Vietnam, earning the Silver Star Medal, the Purple Heart Medal, the Bronze Star, the Combat Action Ribbon, and the Vietnamese Cross of Gallantry Medal with Palm. Brigadier General Droughty's distinguished career continued with many other important assignments, to include serving time in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait as part of Desert Storm, Desert Shield. His service there earned him the Legion of Merit Award. After retiring from the Marine Corps in 1992, Brigadier General Droughty served as Director of Public Affairs for the Marines and later as CEO of the Marine Corps University Foundation. Brigadier General Droughty received an honorary doctoral degree in Warfare Studies from the Marine Corps University, as well as the Leonard F. Chapman Jr. Award for outstanding service to the foundation. He officially retired in 2015 and resides with his wife Sandy in Tampa, Florida. Together, he and his wife have three children, a daughter and two sons. His sister Sharon, who is here today, is also a graduate of St. Patrick's Central. She resides here in Kankakee, and she is a regular volunteer at our annual phone line. Brigadier General Droughty is here today because this evening he is receiving the very first Hometown Honor Award from the Community Foundation of Kankakee River Valley. This award was established by the Community Foundation to recognize individuals who have grown up in our community and then have gone on to distinguish themselves both professionally and personally. In my mind, there couldn't have been a better person picked to be the initial winner of this award. Mr. McNair, we are very fortunate today to have someone with extensive leadership experience and a reputation for motivation and teaching of others. Let's give a McNair welcome, please, to Brigadier General Thomas Grouty.
Thank you.
Before he gets going, when he said nah, he put his hands up like in front of him, like no. And then when he said nah, no, and then he made the up motion with his hands, like give me more. And that's when he started laughing. So a great sense of humor.
Wow, with a reception like that, I should quit while I'm ahead, you know, and just go over and sit down. But Principal Granger, thank you so much for that most generous introduction. Thanks to Principal Granger and the staff and faculty for letting me take your time with our students. I know that this is an imposition on you, but I'm grateful so much for this opportunity. My thanks also to the present and previous staff and faculty. I consider myself the luckiest man on earth, and one of the reasons is that I have an opportunity to thank the people who have done so much for me. We should never wait too long to say thanks. Whatever success that I've enjoyed in my life, in the Marine Corps, following afterwards, everything was due to what I learned here. This was the place that established for me in the classroom, on the playing fields, and all the endeavors, that preparation for life. And it wasn't just the education part, it was the example. The example of selfless teachers, nuns, brothers, priests, the lay faculty, coaches, all of whom devoted their lives to kids like me. I can never, ever repay them for what they've done other than to say thank you. They prepared me so well for going to the Naval Academy. In those days, many of my classmates had already had college. In fact, I had classmates who had graduated from college and were starting over at the academy. We all studied the same thing. And yet, because of the preparation that I had here, I was able to make the superintendent's list every semester. It wasn't because I was inherently smart. It was because I was exquisitely blessed to have the education that I received here at Bishop McNamara, then called St. Patrick Central High School. I want to thank the friends who are here as well. I am honored by your presence. Some of you have known me for a number of years, and as the saying goes, that includes the good, the bad, and the ugly. But nevertheless, you still showed up, and I appreciate that. When I was with USAA, we had a saying that you can pretend to care, but you cannot pretend to be there. If you care, you show up, and you have shown up, and I deeply appreciate that. As Principal Granger mentioned 60 years ago, and he's reminded of this every golf outing, I was on the football team that had the first undefeated season. You've had a number of those since then, but it was special for us. It was special for me to be a part of that team and part of this school. When we transitioned from the old high school there on just off Indiana Avenue next to St. Patrick's Church out to this beautiful facility, which is even more beautiful and more developed and more professional in every respect. I'm so impressed by what I see. And it isn't just the facilities, it's the people that really make these things work. Thanks to my family. Some of them have made a trip even from Colorado to be here. My sister Sharon is indicated as an alumna, as was my sister Helen, God rest her soul. And her, three of her children are here, Mark, his wife Laura, David, and Matt. And they have always been the source of support and inspiration to me. Thank you for being with us. Finally, I want to thank you, the students at Bishop McNamara. I almost said Catholic High School. It is Catholic, and I have to tell you how impressed I am with that continued reinforcement of the Catholicism of this school. And it's more than just a high school. It's now a school with the 7th and 8th graders as well. And what a wonderful decision that was. But this is a Catholic school more than just the name that's on the board or on the sign. It's reinforced by the number of crucifixes and the chapel and the devotion and the focus you have for this thing called Catholic education that you're a benefit to receive. It is special for me to be back. And I'm not sure you have a choice in being here, but you are, and so we hope we'll make the best of it. So we get into that question of why are you here? That question, why, is one that I would hope will be continue to be in your lexicon. Why? Viktor Frankl was an Austrian Jew psychiatrist, was an inmate at Auschwitz and Dachau, saw the worst of man's behavior, atrocities. But he wrote a book that I would invite your attention to called Man's Search for Meaning. And in this book, among other things, he said, if you can explain the why, most people can live with the how. But so often in life, we get right into the how, why, changing, you're going to get this done and so forth. And few people ask the why. What is the reason for doing, sir? So, here we are. We must live with the how after we have that why. And here I am back in my hometown and given a chance by your principal, Granger, to speak. And when I had that opportunity, I have to let you know that I jumped at it. I couldn't say yes thank enough. And some people would say, gee, don't you have better things to do in Kankakee? And my response is, I couldn't be doing a better thing in Kankakee right now than being here with you. So there is not a better thing that I could do. At one time, I saw a statement that just really infuriated me. The statement was, a society is in trouble when its elders cross the street to avoid talking to its youth. A society is in trouble when the elders cross the street to avoid talking to its youth. Now, if we figure out the relationship, I'm the elder, you're the youth. I think you figured that out already, but now that I am an elder, I cross the street in order to talk to the youth. Because of the blessings that I've received and the things that I learned the hard way that perhaps I can pass on to you. What's the subject? I know it's going through your mind. I have this ability to perceive the thoughts that are entering right now. Please, God, not another rambling talk by a senile alumnus on all his successes. You were thinking that, right? I know that. Well, rambling and senile may be accurate. It may be on the mark. But what I'm going to share with you are my failures. My failures. And now I know again what you're asking, and that is, how can this get worse? Who needs this? What's the point of having some old guy stand up and talk about failure? Because failure is part of life. It is often required for success. We all make choices through life. We make them every day. Some of them are good, some not so good. And sometimes that choice turns into a failure. A quote that I found that was interesting said, "I have not failed. I have just found 10,000 ways that won't work." Thomas Edison. It wasn't failure. Those are just finding out what doesn't work. And that's part of what we do in life. Why is it required for success? Because we learn what does not work, as well as something about ourselves, how we handle it. What do we do with failure? Winston Churchill, great man of history, said, "Success consists of going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm." Now here's a great man who suffered tremendous failures. He was a proponent of World War I, that ghastly war, trench warfare, poison gas, an absolute slaughter. And he had this idea in mind: suppose we made an amphibious landing well behind the lines at a place called Gallipoli, the first amphibious assault. It was a disaster. It was a complete failure. And the experts said, "We'll never do that again because it's impossible for that to succeed." But we did it again. And World War II was won because of a series of amphibious assaults in the Pacific as well as in Europe due to Winston Churchill, who said, "Success consists of going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm." So failure, part of life, or it should be. Now we can avoid it. We can avoid failure by not trying. And some do. Some live their lives as spectators and not participants, not players. But if you're going to be a player, and I suspect that attending this fine school you are, you're going to fail. There are going to be things that didn't work out the way that you wanted. But think about this. In baseball, a star batter fails 70% of the time. 7 out of 10 times that he's up to bat, he does not hit the ball safely. And that's a success. Wayne Gretzky, a great hockey player, said, "You miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. Try, and learn from it." So when, if not if, you fail, it's your chance because it's your life. I'm not going to go from the general to some specific examples, mine. And I'm going to give you 3 examples, and I always do this in speaking because people, if they know kind of what's coming, and if the number is 3, then they can kind of listen for a while and sometimes drift off and then come back into the picture. So I hope that you'll stay with me, but I'll keep track of the 3 examples. Example number 1, I am 11 years old. And Little League was just being established in the Kankakee area. Kind of strange, back in 1951. Up to that time, we played just sandlot ball, you know, pickup games and so forth. But now, we're going to play real baseball with uniforms and bases and so forth. So this is going to be great. And my position was going to be a catcher. Why was I going to be a catcher? Simple. I was fat. It's part of the family heritage. It's been passed down for generations. Part of our culture. My parents were fat. We lived on a fat street. In a fat house. We drove a fat car. Our dog Jigs was fat. Exactly. So I'm going to be a catcher because a catcher, you don't have to be real fast and you can just kind of catch the ball and that should work out. So anyway, made the team, received the uniform, a fat uniform, by the way. And life was beautiful. There I was playing Little League ball. And then disaster struck. because showing up late in the game, or late after the tryouts, was a new catcher, Bobby Snyder. God, I hated that kid. He was a better catcher than I was. So, in those days, not everybody got a uniform. I had to give up my fat uniform to him. And I know a psychiatrist would probably have a lot of fun with this, but I remember clearly putting that uniform in the basket of my bicycle and driving to Bobby Snyder's house to deliver that uniform, one hand steering and the other hand wiping away the tears. I was crushed. So, all the others, my friends, were in uniform playing, and I was now a spectator. But not for long. Because the rest of that summer, and the fall and the winter and the spring, I practiced to be a real catcher, not just the fat kid behind the plate. So I learned how to block balls in the deck and how to hit better and so forth. And the next year, I made the team. Got back my uniform, the fat one, and even made All-Stars. That this is amazing, from being cut from the team to making All-Stars. What was the difference? Because I was driven by that thought of not being cut again, of not failing again by trying. So the lesson was never forgotten. How do you handle failure? It's my choice. I could become bitter or better. It was up to me. But if I was going to be better, then I could never quit. I could never give up or give in. That's the point of learning from failure. So now I ask you to think of yourselves, how about you? What have you chosen, and what will you choose when you fail? Not if you fail, but when you fail. The best thing possible for me at age 11 was to fail, but then to rebound. George Patton once said, character is how high you bounce up after you hit bottom. And sometimes in life, we do hit bottom, and it's up to us to bounce back. One time I was talking with a psychologist and sharing that story, and he asked me if I knew the Star Trek story. How many are Star Trek fans? Show of hands. Okay, all right.
This is Tom Drowdy, Brigadier General, United States Marine Corps, retired, and he's addressing his high school class. He alluded to the speech the last time he was on. In fact, he used a little vignette about being his baseball vignette. We're just having a lesson here as he addresses the class at Bishop McNamara Catholic School.
The Star Trek story of where Captain Kirk, commanding officer of the Enterprise, gets his hands on a time machine that will take him back in time. And so it always bothered him that when he was a young cadet or midshipman on the Enterprise, that he had made a mistake and he was unjustly punished, and it always rankled him. So he said, darn, I'm gonna correct this. I'm going to go back in time and correct the mistake so that everything will turn out the way that I think it ought to. Corrected the mistake, came forward in time, and instead of being the captain of the Enterprise, he was one of the deckhands. Because that mistake, that injustice, had driven him to greatness. And I offer to you that it can drive all of us to greatness if we simply don't give up. Second example. A different place, a different venue, 14 years later, with higher stakes. I was commanding a rifle company in Vietnam in April of 1966. And in our zone of action was a main force Viet Cong headquarters, an objective, a hamlet. And a hamlet is a grouping of huts or structures, normally with a well of some kind, and then rice paddies on the outside of it. But this wasn't just a hamlet. This was a fortified hamlet. The enemy was dug in and determined. And as we approached, we came under small arms fire, mortars. This was not going to be an easy task. So I pulled the company into a position of protection and hit it with all the supporting arms that I had available. Fixed-wing aircraft and helicopters and artillery and mortars in order to reduce this fortified hamlet in order to seize it. It was not budging. And now the sun is going down, and I knew that to attack at night would really be disastrous because the night, the darkness, is an advantage to the enemy. He knows where he is. You don't know where he is. So I had to take it while it was still light. And I realized the only way that I was going to take it was at the point of a bayonet. And so I gave the command to my company, 3-7, fix bayonets. One of the few times in the Vietnam War that that command was given. But I want to share with you the feeling that came over the rifle company at that point. We're in mortal danger. And we're not going to be able to drop a bomb on someone or an artillery round or shoot somebody at 300 yards. We're going to charge into the enemy's defenses with a bayonet at the end of that rifle and slash or stab or beat to death another human being. And someone was going to die at one end of that rifle or the other. But this tremendous calm came over the company. It's like, we're prepared for this. We can do this. It doesn't get any grislier than this. And we're ready. The assault was a success. But in the checking of my Marines, one of my squad leaders, Corporal Frederick W. Miller of Berlin, Ohio, had been killed and was outside our perimeter lines. So I called the XOSI, my executive officer, and said, sit in the company, I'm going to go get Corporal Miller. Because in the Marine Corps, you never, ever leave behind a dead or wounded Marine. The following day, battalion commander showed up, Lieutenant Colonel, and as I'm reporting what took place, he saw the blood on my flak jacket, and he was upset that he had not been informed that I had been wounded. And I said, no, this is not my blood. This is from Corporal Miller, and I related what had taken place. Told him what had happened before, during, and after the battle. At this point, he is really upset with me. Really upset. And he orders me to never do anything like that again. Anything that foolish. You know, life offers you some golden opportunities to keep your mouth shut. And sometimes the trick is to take advantage of that opportunity. I did not. I could not. Because my silence would have conveyed that I would comply, that I would follow that order. But it was also, had to remain silent, I would have to live with that for the rest of my life. And that was against all that I was, all that I was raised to be, the values that I learned from places like here, where all of us are today. So I took a deep breath and I said, sir, I understand your orders, but I cannot comply because I'll never leave behind a dead or wounded Marine. The battalion commander goes ballistic. He is outraged. He starts screaming and hollering at me. It was not a good scene. And he begins to relieve me of my command. Now let me share with you that in the Marine Corps, to be relieved in command, in combat, is the worst failure. You can commit many omissions, errors, and so forth, but to be relieved in combat, it's over. I had failed. in his mind. There were no second chances. But it was the end of my career. It was the end of my profession. It was the end of my calling. It was done. All of my boyhood dreams of Kankakee, Illinois, my 4 years this school, my hopes of going to the Naval Academy and becoming an officer of Marines, it's finished. Less than 4 years after graduation, I'm done. And I thought, what is my family going to think of me? What are my friends going to, how can I come back to my high school as a failure? And I remember asking God, why are you doing this to me? About this time, a helicopter arrived. And out of the helicopter jumped a Brigadier General, the Assistant Division Commander of the 1st Marine Division. And as he's looking around, he asked, where is Captain Droughty? And Marines who had been hearing this exchange between the battalion commander and myself, although it was a one-way conversation, are kind of pointing in my direction and backing up so that they would not be hit by the blast. And as the general is walking over, I remember thinking, God, haven't you had enough? I mean, it's enough that my dreams are destroyed, that I'm over. And now whatever is left of my fanny, that's a medical term for buttocks, whatever less of my fanny this brigadier general is going to have, he's going to grab. Instead, he grabbed my hand and with the other hand started beating me on the back and saying, God, that was great, Captain. That was fantastic. Just what we wanted. And then turns to the battalion commander who had been in the process of relieving me and said, Colonel, with company commanders like this, how can you go wrong? Hopped aboard the helicopter and left. It was that close. That close between being finished in the Marine Corps and receiving my first Silver Star. So what are the lessons? First of all, not if you fail, but when you fail, take responsibility. That action, the bayonet assault and going out to pick up Corporal Miller, that was my decision, nobody else's. And I took responsibility for it. And I was not going to ask the battalion commander for a second chance. Oh, please, please, I've learned my lesson. You know, I won't do it again. Nope. That wasn't me. I wasn't going to ask for permission or promise to comply. My responsibility. Second, in life, especially today, there are no secrets. Ask a number of politicians or celebrities or anyone in the public domain about the secret things that they did or failed to do and that they thought would be secret forever. No secrets in a rifle company. Every Marine knew what had taken place, and every Marine knew that in our future battles that he was never going to be left behind, that example had been set. The third lesson was that God has a master plan, which includes our failures and then what we do with them. God also has a tremendous sense of irony. I guess God has everything, but the irony really hit me on this occasion because in Desert Storm, the next war that the Marines were in, I was the assistant division commander of the 1st Marine Division, just like the one who came in Vietnam and saved a young captain named Tom Droughty. Third example, and I share this with very few people, and members of my family will be hearing this for the first time. I was an executive officer of a battalion back in 1976, and my driver came to me one day and said that he would like to have the day off. And I asked, Why? What is the reason for it? And he replied, because my girlfriend's pregnant and I want to drive her to get an abortion. You know, that should have been the easiest decision I could ever make. Not only no, but hell no. But for whatever reason, and I thought about this 1,000 times. I don't know if it's because I didn't want him to get into trouble because I knew he was going to go anyway and get punished for it and so forth. And I said, yes. I said, yes. And in saying yes, I was complicit in the death of that innocent child. So what did I learn? It's easy to become complacent. You know, I thought I was a pretty good Catholic. Mass Sunday and Holy Days of Obligation. For a long period of time, went to Mass and Communion every morning. Raised our children in the faith. Was a lector, usher. Able to resist temptations and the challenges. But not that day. On that day, I failed. There's no happy ending here. Some failures, we have to understand, are forever. That child would be in his or her 40s today. I failed him or her and will live with that for the rest of my life. That failure. So now we reach what I call the so what part. What do I want you to take away from my thoughts with you? First of all, failure is not always fatal. We don't always succeed on our first try, but maybe we do on the second, or the 17th, or the 70th. But we won't know if we quit after one try. The message to all of you, don't ever quit. The second, failure can develop us, and from it we can learn resiliency and persistence and humility, all good qualities to have. Or we can quit after one try and not have those qualities developed. Don't ever quit. Third, the failures in response to them set an example for others who oftentimes are themselves going through some tough times. And whether we want to admit it or not, look to us for example. And we need examples. An example that we should be providing to one another is don't ever quit. And the fourth is that our mother, the Holy Church, and our Blessed Mother truly understand and forgive failures, especially spiritual ones. And we have this wonderful sacrament as Catholics of penance, created for failure, but to give strength to us to keep trying and to not ever quit. So in wrapping this up, and we're going to have some time for questions afterwards, I ask this favor. Be grateful for what and who you are. Young men and women of Bishop McNamara Catholic School, you're identified not just by the uniforms you wear, but by the person you are, the person you should be, your behavior. I hope that you thank your parents and others who are responsible for your being here to provide you with this golden opportunity, as well as the staff and faculty who devote so much to what you're doing. Staff and faculty, I have to tell you what an inspiration you are. I teach as an adjunct professor back in the Tampa area at two universities. You and your predecessors were my role models. I hope that I'm as good a teacher as you and they were. We will keep you in my prayers, my thoughts. God bless America, and God bless you. Thank you.
Tom Drowney at his high school, speaking on November 17th. You know, sitting here listening to that, I need to do a couple more things. I love playing stuff like that. I love listening to people speak, and especially guys with the kind of experience he has. But we're going to start doing battlefield studies where we find out about the bayonet charge that he led. You don't hear many of those get ordered in anybody's career. And I think what would be cool, what I would enjoy doing, is put up on the website maps before the segment that you can go to, and that'll be used in a discussion. You know, it's maps and photographs that whoever is going to come on and talk about whatever we're going to talk about sends me. And then have him being able to use those as references, walk through the, here's the situation, here's the order that I gave, and then here's what happened. And then be able to go through and follow these things, these incidents, and then in the incident itself, What lessons did you learn? What came out of it? And then in retrospect, how maybe their view of the incident has changed over the years. So I'm very much interested in doing that, and maybe we'll do the first one with Tom Drowney. If he either has a map or he can create one, even if it's just this pencil sketch, and then and do those with as many people as we can. Again, it's kind of in keeping with my thoughts about things I'd like to know, things I'd like my sons to know before they went to war. And so maybe we'll just do it audio, video style. And then we get to, at some point, take those and turn them into something else. So listening to him, I just find it inspiring. You know, him talking, Tom Drowdy, who's a pretty successful guy in life, talking about his failures. And he's getting relieved and then ultimately is awarded a Silver Star and continues his career. It's amazing. You know, imagine if the regimental commander had, or the assistant division commander had said, "Nah, I'm not going out there today. Helicopters having problems, blah, 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 blah." How different his life is. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back, wrap things up on a Thursday, heading into the Christmas weekend. So don't touch that dial.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership.
Social.com.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsouthfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. How do you not love this one? Come on.
The wind's whipping down the boardwalk. Hey, Dan! You guys know what time of year it is? What time?
Yeah, it's the time of the year that Gunner's not going to get his $4.5 million pistol.
You guys all been good and practicing real hard. Yeah. Clients, you've been rehearsing real hard now. So stand and bring your new saxophone, right? Everybody out there been good or what? Oh, that's not many of you guys in trouble out here. Yeah, you better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why.
If you've never seen Bruce Springsteen, I did an interview with a friend of mine recently, within the last week, and he runs the Sioux Falls Arena. And Garth Brooks played there 9 times over the course of 2 weeks. How about that? Made a little bit of country music history. And he's a great guy.
And I was talking to him, and I said, what kind of guy's Garth Brooks? And he said he's a good dude. He said, it's hard to be a good dude with all that stuff going on around you, but, you know, so after we made the agreement, and we, you know, they're going to be here for a while, so, you know, they have a rep, and the rep shows up and says, okay, this is the way this is going to lay down, and this is how this is going to work. And he said, oh, and here are some coordinating instructions. Mr. Brooks has a rule. It's called the Rule of 62. What the hell is that? The rule of 62 is that there's 62 people in his crew. What you buy, if you're going to buy him something, you have to buy it for 62 people. Nobody gets more. Nobody gets less. You're part of the team. You're part of the team. Awesome's that. Very good. Anyway, I would tell you, if you've never seen Springsteen, now I don't know as he's gotten older if he does the same. I've been told he does. If you go to one of his concerts, he lets it rip for three and a half hours. Still. First time I ever saw him was, I was at IOC. And we're in the field. A buddy of mine from New Jersey, my roommate, Tim McMahon. He's a big dude. He had graduated from Slippery Rock College. Is it college or university in Pennsylvania? And he didn't know that you could go in as an officer, so he went down and enlisted. And nobody ever told him. They were making mission, right? So he gets to boot camp, and he's being interviewed by his series commander. And the lieutenant looks at him and says, well, why did you choose to enlist? And he says, what? He says, well, you could have come in as an officer. He says, I could have. So... yeah, so then they say, so he finishes boot camp, and they say, look, we'll get your whatever, MESEP boost, whatever we're going to do with you, application ready. Just unscrew the unit diary. And he spends 3 years in the Marine Corps with a series of people making those promises to him. And then ultimately, I don't know, somebody helps him out. But he tells funny stories. So McMahon, he's from New Jersey. Born and raised in New Jersey. So he's telling me while we're in the field, hey, if we get out early on Friday, we're going to go see Springsteen. I'm like, we don't get out early, though. Because Springsteen's playing in Landover, Maryland. So we would have to get out of the field, clean weapons, and then get in the car and drive up. We don't have tickets. So we get out of the field early. We get out of the field about noon. So we're cleaning weapons till about, I don't know, probably about 5 o'clock. And he says, we can go. So we run up to our room. We shower real quick. We hop in his car, or my car, one of the two. And, he says, go get $80. So we go by the bank and we get $80. There was no ATMs back in those days. So we got $80 someplace, maybe from the PX, probably from the PX. Cash the check. We drive to Landover, and I said, now what? And he says, follow me. So we walk up, and we're standing at the entrance. And, he's standing there, and he just yells out, $160 for two tickets if they're decent. And we do that for maybe 3 minutes, and two guys peel out of line and said, here you go. Where are they? And I don't know how decent they were. But we took him and went in, and I'd never seen a concert like that. I mean, Springsteen annihilates it. Absolutely annihilated it. And, you know, most concerts, they come out and they play for what? Maybe 90 minutes. He took a break at about a 30-minute break at about 2 hours. So you're like, what's going on? And McMahon looks at me and goes, it's halftime. And I said, what? He said, yeah. And so if you've never seen him, he goes down. I don't know if he showers. I know he changes his clothes because he sweats like a pig. So he so Springsteen, so then he comes back and plays for like another hour plus. So the whole concert was like three. At the end of it, you're like, okay, stop. I get it. You win. All right? I get it. You win. But so I became a fan of Springsteen. And, you know, his lyrics, he's a great storyteller. There's, if you listen, to, if you read, if you like lyrics, he's a great guy to, he's a great guy to like. He has a song called, Nothing Man. If you've never heard it, it's about a cop. Whose life changes in a cloud of pink vapor, i.e. a gunshot. And then how everybody else that he's around they just live their lives. And his life is so dramatically changed. Here it is.
In my hometown, paper, how my brave young life was forever changed in a mystic cloud of pink vapor. Darling, give me your kiss. Only understand I am the nothing man.
Yeah, it's called The Nothing Man. And his life changes, right? He's changed. It's kind of like going to war. And he comes home and everybody's still doing the same thing.
Everybody acts the same around here. Everybody acts like nothing's changed. Friday night.
Doesn't mean anything till you know you have an experience like that, and then the lyrics change. I remember listening to it after I came back from Iraq, and it sounded totally different to me as a song. Kind of art does that, right? And but I just if you get a chance to see him, I would tell you by all means, of all the artists I've ever seen, Ed Sheeran's another one that I think is unique and great, although he didn't play long enough.
Call me Joe. Buy me a drink and shake my hand. You want courage? I'll show you courage you can understand. Pearl and silver, resting on my night table. It's just me, Lord.
So, things that jump out at you that you hear in the lyric, you know, you want courage, I'll show you courage you could never stand. Right? That's what you see in combat, right? So things that, you know, I don't know where what inspired him to write Hit This or whose story it was that got into his head. But there are these glimpses of, you know, post-traumatic life. Here's that lyric, you want courage, you know. I'll show you courage you can never understand. And then Pearl and Silver. This is Thistle.
Buy me a drink and shake my hand. You want courage? I'll show you courage you can understand. Pearl and silver, resting on my night table. It's just me, Lord.
That'll do it on a Thursday. Nothing Man. Montana back man with us tomorrow. He's not a nothing man. This program repeats itself momentarily, so whatever you do, don't touch that dial. You can hear Tom, we'll go over the news. And then you'll hear Tom Drowdy address his high school speech, his high school class, in a very, very cool speech. So, what? 3 days in a wake up to Christmas, so if you haven't done your shopping, it's going to be exciting. On a Thursday. Marin Radio. Over and out.
America's injured and critically ill service members.